Welcome back.
I'm just going to be honest. These next three are bad. I don't like them. I think Vampire Junction is the most interesting, which is the next one we're going to talk about. I don't agree at all with anything Thrower has to say. I'm glad that he got his spirits up for this one. I really am. I don't see it. I would take Vampire Blues over Vampire Junction.
Well, for sure. I agree with that. Don't worry, though. I'm also not as pilled as Thrower on this one. I like it a lot more than you. But
I'm glad we're back in Shit City. I'll tell you that.
Back in Shit City, those playing along, Los Blues de la Calapop. We're back in Shit City. We're back a little bit and kind of, you know, it's a tiny bit, but Virgin Among the Living Dead. We have a little of that in this one.
Well, we have maybe like, you know, kind of like someone who has a peanut allergy would be worried about cross-contamination. A microbe might have flown into this. You're right.
So, okay, this movie, we won't get into what makes it so discombobulating and why that's some of the best stuff. But Lena, you meet Lena, gorgeous opening. Love the opening closing of this film. I was going to
say, the best part is the opening with her in the car. That signals a much better movie that doesn't ever arrive. I mean,
well, I think it almost gets there a couple times, but I do think the comedy, the direct comedy, does get in the way of that. Because again, every time it's about to, I think, get back to that level, do something like a website for Father Flanagan. Yeah. You know, it's the first time we see a computer in a Jess movie, and let me say, it's not welcome. but basically, Lena shows up to this place. Supposedly, she's like, you know, looking into some shit or whatever. And it's Vampire Junction, right? There are vampires everywhere. And there are a couple people. There's a guy named Father Flanagan who's supposed to help out. There's a Billy the Kid Wanted poster for some reason. It feels like we're definitely in Benidorm, though. And the reason I do like this for Jess heads, and I'll be quick, I promise I practiced. Jess's obsession with these towns that are not real, like Benidorm, where most of the year it's completely abandoned. And then once a year for a couple months, it's bustling. We're at one of those places again, except it's a Wild West like movie set. I do think that there are some excellent moments. I do think Sondra Olsen in this, when we do get that insane crab walk sequence, when they're seducing Lena and pulling in, I think that's getting close to the opening and close. And it really helps again, the music in this, for my boy. I know you love music.
Music. I love it. I like my music like I like my milkshakes. Concrete.
I was letting you do it. Yeah. But the weaving of this music with the sound effects again, because Jess is clearly excited again about that weaving that he was known for in something like Virgin Among the Living Dead, you know. I do think this one's very, very much worth watching. I don't think it's an entire success, but since the beginning and end I do think are so strong, I don't think this one's a suffer through.
Yeah, it's not a suffer through, but the vampire woman with her stupid fucking red hair. Oh, it just, this one does wear its dated aspects pretty boldly, and it's tough.
Yes, but only in those moments. And that's why it's frustrating, because when it's not being clearly dated to the time it is, and these, I'm trying to be nice, but these fucking horror dudes who are helping to pay for stuff, when they get what they want in there, it's a bummer. But when they don't, this movie's pretty worthwhile.
Next one. Boy, another piece of shit that does, I will, the ending doesn't redeem it, but it's the best part of the movie. And this is Incubus, and it is an unfortunate remake of, like all of these, one of his most stellar efforts, Lorna .. The Exorcist.
And I'm sure a lot of you know this already and why we're off to a really bad start with that title. An incubus is male and a succubus is female. So it already doesn't make sense, and not in any interesting way. Again, Thrower's trying so hard.
I know. I imagine Jess like chain smoking in his favorite armchair, just being like, well, we did succubus already. No, I guess Incubus. That's where they landed on it. I think that was all that, like,
yep. This I guess the important thing to talk about, Quiet Village Film Productions hops on at this point, and they do play a part. But what that means is the guy who runs Quiet Village Film, Carsten Frank, puts himself in this fucking movie. And even though I know you hate it and I understand why, even though I do like the opening, if there weren't any credits on it of the dude being whipped for a long time too, and more male nudity than usual in a Jess movie. But the problem is Carsten Frank, this guy who ponied up with money, also put himself in the movie, and he is an absolute black hole of charisma. Yeah. This man, I want to punch this man so bad. He's a terrible actor. He's not interesting. And that's the biggest problem, even though almost everything else except the closing scene is also a problem. This guy being the centerpiece of this movie, I've never lusted more for Paul Mueller to just come back from the dead.
Yeah, I looked it up and was like, who is this guy? I had no idea who he was. Then it's like this.
Yeah, he's a fucking producer.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Less said on that, the better, because we got to move through, because this next one we have.
Yeah. Just honestly, skip to the end. Skip to the end.
Okay, so let's just do this. The next one is called Killer Barbies vs. Dracula. No one gives a fuck. Next. I mean,
nope, I'll really say, wait, let me say one thing. Same thing. The making of doc. Excellent. Well worth your time.
Just made by Carsten Frank, actually.
It is, but he did a good job on that. This movie sucks. I'm devastated that Katja Beinhart came back for this one and not for something else.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. I would love
and to. And this talk, is, but
yeah.
He's my opinion, just being brutalized by these dudes. He tries to put in his interstitials. They are nice, but nothing can make this go down anything except horrifically.
It's horrific. It tries to be funny. The tonal ambience of the first Killer Barbies is gone. It's all the bright lit bullshit. There's some AIDS jokes, which is cool. We'll take that.
But they're not even jokes, though.
They're not even jokes. Dracula gets on. It's bad. Moving on. The next one. Las Flores de la Pasión. Terrible. A bad, bad time.
It's a remake of The Voyeur and the Exhibitionist. I got one.
The other one's better. The other
one and a half things. I agree. Not a good movie. What matters here? And I'm not even kidding. As far as emotion, this is one of my favorite Lena moments ever. The way she cries in this movie at the end when they have that scene, it's just that incredible close up and she just starts weeping. It's beautiful. It's like it's some of her strongest performance ever. I don't know if you remember it. I understand if you don't, because it's hard to stick with this movie.
No, I kind of remember it, but I don't.
It's beautiful.
It stick out to me, but maybe I was just so exhausted.
Well, she was probably just crying from watching the movie being made. She's like, Jess, please. But that, and then we do get an Oscar statue with a penis to continue Lena's obsession there.
It's her last sexual role, isn't it? Isn't it her last time on screen?
No, that's the next one.
Oh, that's right. Because these are very similar. So that one was called Flowers of Passion. This next one is the Flowers of Perversion. For all you you French poetry heads out there. This is basically kind of like the fallow crest
Philistia versus Fallowcrest.
Yeah. Back-to-back remakes, like truly just one, like they're the same thing basically, where the second one improves a bit upon.
I'd say quite a bit, but that's only because the first is so bad.
I would agree with that for the Fallowcrest ones. This one is.
Oh, no, I mean this. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I don't agree with you, but I would like to. This is the thing that keeps me through this one is that it's Lena's last time being nude, being truly doing the thing. And I don't mean like this is the last time I get to see them titties. I mean the last time I get to see them titties, because she loves showing them titties.
This is good too. I do the thing that gets me through this one and the first one as well, as much as you can. The music helps because thank God it's finally fucking classical music and jazz again and not these goddamn boys that are forcing their music into his movies. But what really helps here is the chemistry between Lena and the other women in these films, especially the second one, is very much present, I think. And that that's what gets you there. The music's beautiful. If you just disassociate and watch these images, you'll make it through.
Yes. All right. Now let's talk about a good one. You're probably thinking, I didn't think this would happen during this episode. Well, it just did.
They know because we've shown it.
Yeah, that's true. You know, because we showed it at Whammy Analog, and this is by far my favorite of the bunch. That's right. It's 2005 Snake Woman. We got 10 minutes left, by the way. Snake Woman, amazing. We've talked about it, I know, before, but to me, this is where the SOV period hits its stride, and it finally starts working for Jess, the digital stuff. There's a sex scene in the middle that is way too long and indicative of a lot of the problems of these movies. If you can get on its wavelength and go into the hypnosis of it, congratulations. No one's going to blame you if you can't tap into that. Like, it used to be easy with Jeff.
I mean, I'll blame you.
No, I'm giving you a pass this time because you've tapped into a lot of these quote unquote boring sex scenes that are quite hypnotic in the past. I don't know if I find this one hypnotic. I think it truly, if even 2 minutes had been shorn from it, maybe.
It's really just that one shot we talked about. It's the back one shot, reverse shot, shot, reverse shot, shot, reverse shot. Get rid of those last two and then it works. This, if you don't know this movie, Vampiros Lesbos, Lauren the Exorcist, and the sex version of female vampire put in a blender. Dr. Nostradamus in this thing. It's good. It's good. We love this one. And shout out to the person at our screening at Whammy, this woman who came who'd never seen a single Jess Franco movie and was scared by our intro because we were like, holy shit, this is going to be quite an experience for you if you've seen none of them. She came to the table, bought a bunch of shit, and was like, this dude rocks. So if you were a person who'd never seen any and you watch Snake Woman and you vibe with it, you are the coolest kid on the block.
Yeah, and you are truly in a league of their own because I understand this is not where you should start, despite that being said. This should definitely come later. But, you know, I do think that he's getting closer to the sort of stuff that Lynch would do in this territory with Inland Empire. I think, like, I find it quite spellbinding. I think the music gets it all right. I think everything.
The incidentals, again, astonishing. Yeah.
It's like all cooking on this one. It's just like, it's a shame that there weren't more like this one.
Yep. And so before we get to the next one, which is very quick, at this point, Jess is desperately trying to get more money. So he turns back to his buddies, Eurocine, because they settled their beef over the rights and all different sorts of things from some past films. The reason he's trying to get to Eurocine is because he desperately wants to make his Dr. Orloff movie. And all we'll say about that, just to tantalize, and we can dream about it forever. His plan was Malcolm McDowell was going to be in this film playing Orloff. Udo Kier had also already said yes to this film, was going to be in it. And for whatever reason, even though I think it's a bad idea, it would have been cool. Jess was already talking with Iron Maiden to do his original music. And sure, you asked me if Iron Maiden in the early 80s were going to do an original soundtrack, I'd say hell yeah. You asked me in the late 90s, I say yeah, I don't think so, but I guess give it a whirl.
I would still say no in the early 80s because god damn, dude, when that happens, shit happens in like Phenomenon, it's just like, stop. Just stop.
Yep.
That brings us to
La Cripta de las Mujeres Malditas. And that's a movie we already talked about.
Real quickly,
that is the full length, which I have done to myself, the full length version of Flowers of Passion, Flowers of Perversion. So when the Eurocine money didn't come through, one of the producers on the movie we're going to talk about after this, Farron Hevrons, I think is his name, he was like, Jess, this huge opus you made, this almost 4-hour thing, is never going to come out because it was never released. Do you want to split it into two? And what he split it into was Flowers of Passion and Flowers of Perversion. So it's basically the same movie, just cut together.
Yeah, it's really, let's not try to finish this in 5 minutes. It's unfortunate because this is one of those ones that, like, when I first heard about this movie, I had heard that he had prepared it for a retrospective at the Cinémathèque Française. And it was like, well, that must be something if he's going to get the Cinematheque to play this movie. And I'd heard from some people who, let's say, peddle in the bad faith community, really sold this to me as this is like Jess at his most experimental. And, you know, you hear that and you're like, well, I'm interested. You see the pictures like of the whatever poster was put together and you're like, yeah, I mean, getting back to some gothic vibe. Like, you know, I'm interested. I want to see it. I'd never seen a frame of this movie. Well, when I finally did, I was shocked, actually, and had to hit the fast forward. I stayed through it, but I had to see, is it going to stay like this?
Yes.
Skip. Yes. For 4 hours, basically, you are going to get just the most boring lesbian sex scenes possibly ever committed to tape or film.
This, as I said, I can vibe with shit like this if I'm in the right mood, and the music's good enough. It is here for me, but I agree with you. This is not what we had all hoped and dreamed of when we heard about Jess making an experimental 4 hour thing. You know, definitely firmly for the completists.
Yes.
Whether you find some enjoyment, you might, whether you want to die, you might, but completists only.
Yeah. If you want to see what Jess's house looks like.
Well, you can see it in the next movie.
We can see it in the next one, which our next movie. Will, I know that you love this one, and I know that I probably don't love it as much as you, but I certainly, after what we've just been through, this is the better version of that. Mercifully brought down to under 50 minutes. So
yes,
you can hang with this one. If you want to know what the Crypt of the Cursed Women was all about, don't bother. Just put this one on and it'll do the job.
Yep. Before we get to the actual movie, just one thing I forgot to mention at the end that we need to talk about as we get to this finale. Which is also why I got a beer, because I'm trying not to cry. But so during the shooting of Snake Woman, which we mentioned, we also forgot to mention it's the one time we have Morpho, Andros, and Alpha all in the same movie. If that doesn't wet your whistle, I don't know what
does. Oh, and Snake Woman? Yeah, I mean, we did forget. So sick. That's pretty cool to have them all in one spot, yeah.
Yes, but what's important going on behind the camera there is that Jess is Parkinson's. Is really starting to affect him. And so while shooting Snake Woman, it's getting to the point where he has to be in a wheelchair and people are helping him shoot, take him outside, all that stuff. So that's starting to really affect him.
That's why a lot of the shots in those movies are from one like vantage point.
Yes. That's also why Snake Woman's so especially remarkable, because you can tell he was like, I'm still shooting it, but you put me in that fucking car. We're going to go get those birds, and then you bring me back to this hotel and push me through the room.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one, though, where I know that the other guy, that Emilio, whatever his name is, this is where he did pick up the camera. But yes,
Jess trusted him fully at that point to actually do what he would be doing.
Yeah.
So the movie John is alluding to, before I say the title, if you ask Jess what this one's based on, he would say the story of Jekyll and Hyde, and then also Jean Cocteau's The Human Voice. Now that we've said that, throw that in the trash, because there ain't none of that shit here, but there's lots of other stuff. And this movie is called Paula Paula. This is shot in exactly the same space, Jess and Lena's apartment, as the other movies that John mentioned. And this also produced by a new group, Cinebinario. And this, as John said, is one that I love a whole lot. I really think this is a very hard thing to pull off. While I agree with many people who say, Jess included, that it's more of a installation, art piece feeling than a movie. I do think that's true. I think if you are in the mood and on the Franco tip, this can really take you somewhere. And I do think there's actually a lot to it as far as why Jess is making it. And the very little plotting that there is in this film, which happens basically at the very beginning, all you really need to hear from him is the idea that your home can be a chamber of hell, is how he words it. And so, you know, keep in mind, Jess is literally trapped in a wheelchair at this point. And so he makes a film that kind of is a loose setup. Lena is in it. She's a cop, maybe. Doesn't really matter. All that matters is we're going to, for about 45 minutes of this 50-minute runtime, or 49 minutes, whatever it is, watch these people dance in front of Jess in his wheelchair with varying reflections and really, I think, perfecting something that he did to help save us at the end of Incubus, where he does this mirrored split down the middle of his frame, but commits to it for the entire time. And I don't know, I find this movie an absolutely beautiful way to meditate and then get really sad about how Jess felt being trapped in that wheelchair and in his apartment.
Yeah, I think that's probably the only way to... The only way you're going to see your way into this one, because...
Well, it's not a movie.
It's not a movie. It is an audiovisual experience, as he says at the beginning. So, you know, this, it's, you know, it's not the best of experimental cinema, but it is him doing it in the best way he could. Although I might extend that to the next movie, but... I think
different beast,
but I think like this is just, you know, it's the better of all of these movies that do this kind of shit, other than the one we're about to talk about, because it does carry a certain sadness to it. If you know Jess, but again, if we're playing the objective game here and you put this on, you had no idea, you'd be like, what the fuck am I watching? Like,
yeah, unless you just like only traffic in, you know, completely plotless, single setting experimental film, you're probably going to just say, what the fuck, and hit stop on your DVD player. But yeah, if you know, then it really, I think, carries something special, especially because what came right after this in their life before the movies begin. So in late 2011, Lena, not feeling good, doesn't know why. I believe, if I remember it right, the story goes, she told a couple of her friends that she was just so tired all the time, she couldn't figure out why. Yeah. And that means a lot, because Jess and Lena, as you all know listening to this, never fucking stopped moving or working. So being tired is a very noticeable thing. So one of Lena's friends encouraged her to go to the doctor, found out that she had really aggressive late stage cancer. And then it was a couple months later, February 15th, 2012, at the age of 57, which is crazy. Lena Romay leaves this mortal coil, and obviously unreal, sad, and just can't imagine what it was like for Jess, because this is one of those relationships that truly, you know, it's the cliche of a wedding, and the reason it's a cliche is because it's normally not true, but these two were one person in my mind, you know.
Oh yeah, I mean, totally. Like they found each other at a point in their life where they probably didn't expect it. And they made so much great work together. So it's, you know, I think like the next movie is very fitting for this in that regard, because, you know, I mean, what do you say? I mean, Lena's one of the great performers, one of the most animalistic performers. No one has the look of, like, yeah, like carnivorous desire in her face, like Lena. And she did so much for his movies. She wrote most of them. She came up with a lot of the ideas herself. So I can only imagine that his apartment felt more like a hell when it was all over, because I'm sure all he could think of was the memories there. So, and he's probably thinking, like, I outlived you.
That's what I was going to say. If you're paying attention at home, one of Jess's greatest fears, and part of why he loved to do tax credits and things for Lena and other people and all that, is greatest fear was them dying before him.
Yeah.
And it fucking happened. Thankfully, arguably the third, I guess, the outside of those two, the third biggest component of the entire Jess Franco universe knew exactly what to do.
Yes, he did. He said,
God damn, it makes me so emotional. Antonio fucking Mayans.
He came out when he needed him the most. He said, all right, enough of your mourning. It's not going to help anything. You know what you need to do. You need to get behind the camera again. And we all need a friend like that who can pull us out of our pity partying. And, you know, because it's tough, but you do have to, in the wake of such grief, you have to be shaken. Because, you know, as much as Jess probably was starting to lose faith with life or the zest for life, you know, like, no one really, if you value any of this experience, wants to be like the loved one that ended up dead. So even if it feels like you're pulling, something's pulling you towards it.
I think Mayans wisely knew as well. And I'm sure we've all experienced this in our lives, whether grandparents or otherwise. When people are this connected, it's a pretty safe bet, even if it's not suicide or whatever, that when half of that duo goes, the other one's going to follow soon. And I think Mayans knew that. I think he knew that Jess would not be here long, and that he knew that what Lena would want more than anything and what Jess would want more than anything is to keep fucking working until the day is gone.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And good thing he was around when he was, because we love that Mr. Mayans. And he pulls him up. He says, I hope he said, you're going to make another movie and you're going to do it right now. And it's not going to be like the shit you just did. And he said, okay, I'll do a little bit of that. Yes,
I have three teeth left in my head. Let's see what we can make happen with those.
Yeah. And then it's really just kind of like this and doing interviews with Severin, you know, like that's like, that's about the end there. So this last movie that he directs, it's called Al Pereira versus the Alligator Ladies. Alligator in Spain means pussy or vagina. So it's really Al Pereira versus the pussy ladies or vagina ladies. Because no one turns into an alligator in this movie. This one we'll be brief with because we could go deep. And I think people have smarter people have written about it more in depth. But
what really Reed Thrower's whole section on this, because if we start, we'll go for an hour. Just on this,
it's not important to do that when there's someone who wrote this much better. But what I want to say is that though if you're like us and you went along this journey and you started maybe flipping through some scenes, you might quickly think, oh God, more of this. But it's not. There's more to it than that. And I mean, yes, you're going to get a lot of writhing and women, lesbian scenes, these lesbian scenes that are very boring. But thankfully, this movie has a lot more going for it. And those scenes with the women take on a kind of a more totemic, like, I don't know if totemic's the right word, but this like apocalyptic quality, because what has Jess done throughout his whole career? But show babes getting naked, and of course he loved it, and who doesn't? But like, we might remind you that in order to make the movies he really wanted to make, you know, he had to sort of succumb to these softcore guidelines. And you know, that's why when we talk about him, we kind of, when we've tried to show his movies, we forget, at least I for sure forget the nudity, because
we're just used to it. Yeah,
and that's kind of what's so brilliant about him is the nudity. Yeah, you can make the case for it being exploitative or male gaze. What, honestly, if you're still doing that, pack it up, and I'll catch you at Dollop getting a slice of pie and a.
I mean, also just like, guess what? If Jess was alive and you went up to him and said that, he would go, "Duh."
Yeah,
it's not a hot take.
It's a stupid take. You sound stupid if you keep saying that shit.
if you don't believe us, watch this movie, because this movie is a brilliant deconstruction of that, his entire career, Antonio Mayan's part in all of it, all of the women's part in all of it, Lena's part in all of it, even though she's not in it. She's very present in this film. And maybe the most fun, what the fuck Al Pereira means and why Jess kept coming back to it. And finally, you find out that goddamn right, Al Pereira is absolutely Jess Franco and always has been throughout the entire.
I mean, he showed us he could be him in Downtown. Maybe still one of his, maybe my favorite of the Al Pereira.
I think it's objectively the most well-made.
Yeah. A Bronless, of course, when it looks better and is cleaned up, that movie.
But we'll find out.
Yeah. Cause that is truly in horrendous, a horrendous state right now of quality. So, I think that one is going to look better. But even the '80s, you know, I can fuck with most of the Al Pereira stuff. Even when he's Al Crosby, he's still Al Pereira.
I enjoy all of them, even when they're not great. It's a fun character. But I guess basically, since we're not telling you about plot, because I think one, that would be difficult.
Yeah, let's not do that. The Thrower is much better at trying to parse the plot out.
Well, yeah, and we don't need to. I guess all I would say is if what we're saying doesn't entice you, if you like us, do enjoy the times Jess has really indulged one of his favorite filmmakers, probably his favorite other than John Ford, and that is Jean-Luc Godard, kind of like he did a little bit in Sex is Crazy. But if you watch Sex is Crazy and you were like, I wish he really had committed to it and was really going very hard in that direction fully and not just the beginning and the end of the movie, you know, this movie is that. It's him and Mayans pulling everything apart, both with heavy sadness and with like childlike fucking immature little shit kicker glee. And it is, I don't know. I think this is, it's such an incredible experience. If you care about these people and have followed their world, I think it's an incredible coda.
And it's also one of the best shot of the digital movie. Like the framing is, grief makes us do lots of things, but it definitely made him remember how he frames shots. And this is the most, along with Snake Woman and bits from the other ones, that feels like Jess from his literally golden period, and also just the overall golden period of Jess in the heyday, hopping into the SOV world, because you remember those kind of Wells inspired shots of that, the way he can elongate an object in a room, the way he can frame a door to make it feel sinister. Those are all back in this movie,
really hard to do.
Yeah. It's just really competently made, and it just gives off this kind of Shaggy Dog quality that might be off putting, but we promise there is a lot of depth in this movie that if you've just been a fan this entire time, this movie will hit you. Because, you know, without going into all the things, you know, yes, like you said, it's an investigation of what the hell Al Pereira was a conduit for Jess, but also like this kind of, you know, he also like, as much as he sees himself probably as a detective, because he is a voyeur, and I think his detective spy films go a long way to kind of like really graphically cement that idea in genre terms of a person who's always looking and investigating, he's definitely Al Pereira, but he also looks Al Pereira to be this kind of like buffoon, this kind of idiot. I mean, it's the final line. He says, I think we made him look like an idiot, but he's always made him look like an idiot. I mean, Al Pereira, except when the one where he has a kid, has been, you know, that one, he's just like a fucking idiot. And there's even that great line in this one where he's like, yes, those damn unionists. I wish I could kill them all. Do you remember the union leader and On the Waterfront? Which is a funny in joke, because clearly Jess has seen him on the waterfront. And yeah, I guess the bad guy played by Lee Cobb in that is Lee Cobb, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. A long fucking time.
But he's not a union member. That's a mafia guy who has taken the union, as they always did, and infiltrated the unions to make them seem seedy and to not get any public trust. So again, Al is just a little behind. He's been behind about trans people. He's been behind about the way the world works. I do think like he's meant to be this, like, I don't think Jess sees any glamour in the concrete idea of a private eye or a spy or a cop or anything like that.
No, I think it's why like someone like Jess would, you know, he never talked about it, of course, but why he would like be so truly like adverse to some dumb shit like Batman, right? He's like, fuck off. Like, I don't, no, shut the fuck up. It's like the last thing we need is like a, you know, a vigilante that's convinced.
Heroes are for kids, right? In his opinion, heroes are for kids.
Heroes are for kids. Absolutely. Yeah. And I also think it's, I won't spoil the moment that the music tells you this, but if you, like us, are also a big fan of what, in my opinion, one of the first times Jess very directly kind of looked back at himself aggressively when he did Sadist of Notre Dame and cast himself in such a big role and such a contemplative role, this film fits very much into that, in moments, of course, because again, it's more playful. But if you like that kind of Jess truly just looking back in, and like you said earlier, I think why this all works so well is because I think Mayans was truly like, dude, shut the fuck up. You have another one in you. You have a masterpiece in you. I can help you do it. I understand you. You understand me. You can do it.
Yeah. No, I mean, plus you get Al donning his monk robe again from the Antonio Warren Snake Woman, which could be a reference to Mansion of the Living Dead, because certainly the other costumes in this one scene we're talking about, there's a character dressed like a nun.
Well, then this is just pure fucking glee.
Yeah, I mean that's what, like,
doing, but it is just a gift. It
is a gift. There's a nun who's clearly the Portuguese nun. There's clearly a there's the spider outfit from Diabolical.
Yes, yeah, the Miss Morte. Yeah,
there's a witch. Yeah, I think like a demon's reference.
Yeah, I think so. But
it's a robot. There's that robot, which I could be Attack of the Robots, but it could also be like just the idea of like mind control. And
yeah, I think that's what it is.
And Morpho, it could have been all that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think why it feels so refreshing as well is, my guess again is Antonio, even though I'm sure he liked some of the things or some of the moments, but I think he saw what these young people were doing to him with the painful jokes and the self-referential style of just putting your own fucking movie posters on the wall, and t-shirts and stuff. And was like, Jess, you've done this your whole career and you know how to do it well. Let's be self-referential, but you don't have to like do it for these neckbeards.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So
this is a witty movie. It is a movie just oozing with wisdom at the end of someone's life, I think. And I don't know. I think it's now, it kind of was before we did this journey, but now for me, if someone asked me to make a, you know, if I was forced to do a top five of swan songs, this is definitely in there.
Potentially. Yeah. I have to think about that, but it's a swan song, and it feels like the final moment. And hopefully it's a really nice thing for everyone who's listened and who listen. If you're a Patreon member and you pay, who knows? Maybe we'll help you find this movie.
Who knows?
Who knows? But you know, it's just go into it with an open mind and open heart, and don't go into it if you're not if you really haven't been on this journey. Even if you're just kind of a light fan, you're not going to get out of it what you're supposed to get out of it. It's very personal. It's very stuffed. It's truly stuffed with allusions and lines and references. So we're not going to break down the whole thing, but you can watch it and discover it on your own. All right. I guess we kind of at the end, let's talk about
one more thing to cover.
And let's make it quick, because this is not Jess. This is.
Yes. Let me real quick though. We just got to highlight. So we said Lena died February 5th, 2012, only 14, well, less than 14 months later, after they'd made this movie. April 2nd, 2013, Jess passes away. Now, what's important before we talk about the next one, the end of Al Pereira versus the Pussy Ladies says they'll be back, right? Says there'll be more. As soon as they finished that one, Jess and him started shooting more. They started. And then Jess didn't make it to the end of the movie. And that leads us to the final film we're going to talk about, Revenge of the Alligator Ladies, which is one of the sweetest love letters to a friend I've ever seen. And this is Mayans taking the 40 minutes roughly that Jess had shot, that they had shot together for the movie, and then saying, you know what? I'm going to keep going down and follow his lead. What I'm going to do is make a movie still in this universe. I'm going to weave in Jess's stuff, and then I'm going to play myself, and then I'm going to play myself playing myself, and then I'm going to play Al Pereira and weave this all into a globe-trotting adventure, continuing to explore Al Pereira, and this time explore further what Al Pereira means to Antonio Mayans, having played him, knowing that this is a Jess proxy in a lot of ways. I love this one as well. I love this one. And you can watch as well, if you get the DVD, you can watch just Jess's footage all by itself, or you can watch the whole, you know, the whole cannoli. But this is another one, absolutely, I would say save it till the very end, because it won't mean much unless you do. It might even be annoying. But if you save it till the end and you're sad, you know, Jess's last film died right after, died while he was making the next one, probably his best friend on earth outside Alita, finished it and finished it in a way that Jess would have been, I think, incredibly happy with, you know?
I think he would have been. I think, like, it's just, it's the final word that, you know, Antonio could put together. And the best part about it is, and too bad, but he goes looking for Katya Beinhart and tries to get her to show up in the movie. She basically godards him. She just straight up.
Yeah.
But thankfully, he's not that fucking loser we've talked about many times. What the fuck is that guy's name now? I can't even remember.
JR.
Yeah. Oh, JR. Fucking
fuck that dude. No, yeah. He doesn't belong in this. This is a love fest. Yeah. Katya Beinhart was still mad that she said yes to Killer Barbies.
I was going to say, I think she was very mad that when she saw the Dracula do the dance number with the Killer Barbies on stage, was like, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Yeah. But
shame, because it would have been really cool to see Katya show back up and chat with him. But yeah. I get it.
Yep. And and what Mayans does with that not working is great as well, I think. I don't know. It's beautiful. It's just very rare. Can you think of any other filmmakers? How many filmmakers do you get to see their last film truly finished by, like, their best friend on fucking earth, right? We have some times where friends have taken over projects people wanted to make, but I don't know if I can think of another where it's truly like the person who knows them better than anyone else living.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of one that came out this year in the music world that has to be one of the most reprehensible things I've heard all year, and that's by someone's brother. That's the great artist Sophie, who left us too early, and her stupid brother made not a Sophie. We're not going to get into it, but my point being, that is an example of someone who should know you very well, but clearly just made a cash grab. Which is pretty disgusting.
And this is the opposite.
This is the exact opposite of that.
It's
yes.
Just love. And it's also, I don't know. We haven't met him, of course. Hopefully we will. So we're getting closer to that. But we haven't met Mayans. But he strikes me as someone who's the best kind of friend, because I think he is. He's brutally honest. He will never fucking mince words with you. But also he loves and stands up for harder than anyone on earth ever could imagine for a friend. And so I think there's no better way. Because I had someone reach out who was like, should I even bother with that last one since Jess didn't direct it? Absolutely, you should. If you're on this train and you love Jess, you're going to love that film.
Well, Jess made such a family for the Mayans crew and the whole family Mayans, so that, you know, they were clearly deeply interconnected and probably more like family. Certainly more than Sophie's retarded brother. So
should we just end it with our love, or should we read Thrower's thing at the end of the book? It's so nice. We don't have to.
People can read that themselves.
Yeah. Just read that. Read
our thing. Fuck Stephen Thrower. We're not. We don't have to.
You're right.
Our show. I don't see you on here.
Yeah. Read that.
We love you, Stephen. I love you.
when you want to. It's really nice.
Yeah. Well, here we are. The end of the Franco Files. Or is it? Well, it is, but if you're a Patreon member and someone who spends $5 a month, we have another one that we've talked about, I think, on the previous episode. But and there might be a teaser out now about it. But we who knows? This is out of our control. So, we have a Franco Atonement episode where we are going to go through everything again. Pick out the ones that maybe we were short with, we didn't give enough time to. Maybe I straight up hated because of Will's enthusiasm for him, which felt a little over the top. And I'll be the first to admit that. And I am trying to see some of these movies differently. And some, actually, that we were really curt to, I've watched again and think are probably some of the greatest stuff he's ever done. So,
and I am also, even just to encourage you Patreon people, I'm going to surprise John, and I'm going to challenge myself, not with the relook of things that we didn't give enough love to. I'm planning on going through and having two titles that maybe I went overboard on and just mention them. And we'll see what those may be.
That's very big of you.
I know, and there. I know it's tough to choose because I do that so rarely.
You had so many, yes.
It's a tiny little, what, like maybe once or twice ever.
In this so we're gonna high and low it. I'm gonna, you know, bring some of the lows up. He's gonna take some of his highs down, and we're gonna meet right in the middle. And that actually will be the definitive statement on the Franco Files.
It will, until we, you know, do another commentary soon that we can't say yet, but.
Well, yeah. Well, we can't we?
No.
We can talk about Thong Girls.
Oh, I'm not talking about Thong Girls.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
No, I'm talking about another one that we...
We'll
say we're guest stars.
We'll be quiet about that because we should not be too bold about that one. But we need to talk about that, actually. But yeah, but if you do want more of this, you can buy it on Blu-ray.
Back on sale, and it's only $20 too right now on sevenfilms.com.
$20. Thong Girls. One of the sweetest films in his entire oeuvre. A film that will make you probably challenge ideas you might have had about him.
Yep.
I think.
I agree.
Okay. I agree. If
this little owl man is just a freak ass pervert, you're wrong. He is a freak ass pervert, but he's also got a heart of gold.
He's got a heart of gold in there. And yeah, so that's the end of the Franco Files on the public. So if you want to hear the final word, that is the actual way to end this all. Just give us $5. It's Christmas time. You're going to spend it on probably more on a scone, and scones taste like shit. So like, just give it to us. You know, we've worked hard on this. We want to be able to buy a little Christmas goose
instead of you know, trying to do Lent this year or whatever. You can practice Franco, which means giving us $5.
Give us $5 and you'll get that final ending. You'll get some other Franco episodes that never aired publicly, and along with that Thong Girls Blu-ray from Severin coming out, Francomania the tour will continue in 2025. Where will we go?
Well organized this time.
We'll actually be a well-oiled machine this time. So that's a problem for a lot of you. So so keep your eyes peeled for that, because that should get sorted soon. And I guess we'll just start having to talk about other filmmakers again.
Yep. Who knows? Maybe we'll talk about a candy bar related to a film studio. Maybe we'll talk about, you know, someone from not Spain, but maybe that crossed paths with this guy we've been talking about. Who knows?
Maybe we'll talk about a genre that no one ever talks about.
That's true.
We got a couple ideas where we're going to go next, and we'll vet them soon. But until then, this has been fun. Who knew that talking about all the Jess Franco movies in order was going to be the most successful thing we ever did with this stupid endeavor? So I wouldn't have guessed it, but
I'm not going to lie. Obviously, I'm sad that it's over, but I laughed today. Last tease for the Patreon exclusive episode. I laughed because when I was going through about which ones I wanted to talk about for the Atonement, I was like, there's not enough to choose from. I wish she made more movies. I kept going through my list and I was like, nah, I need more to choose from.
This is why Will needs to pick five that he needs to atone for. Probably 10, but we'll settle with whatever he can muster up.
No, three that I didn't love enough, two that I love too much.
Why don't you flip that, actually? Because I don't think you even have three that you said bad things about.
You'd be shocked if you went back through.
And I never will. So on that note,
thanks to all you fucking weirdos who dig this shit. We appreciate it. And yeah, we're just pumped. I don't know. It fills my heart every time another person is like, wow, I'm interested. I'm curious to explore this guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of hours now devoted to it. So you don't think there's enough, we can't help you. Otherwise, we'll catch you on disc, or we'll catch you in potentially your city in 2025 doing more of this with Uncle Jess. But until then, if we don't see you before the holidays, have a happy holidays.
Yeah,
happy holidays. We will see you before the holidays, but just in case someone forgets again. All right. Goodbye, our fearless Franco fans.
Bye-bye, friends.